We grumbled and tweeted, yes, and some did a lot more and really did try to organize campaigns around this. But did we shut down cities like the Canadian truckers did? Did we do it to demand pharmacare and public health care and an end to global vaccine apartheid? Certainly many mainstream liberals had nothing to say about it except get your vax and in Fauci we trust. More fertile political ground was ceded and Bannon became the one taking on Big Pharma's greed, or seeming to. Of course, it's always through this twisted doppelganger mirror, which is not about the real scandals that we know and can prove, but is about this idea that the vaccines are tracking you, it's a plot to cull us, and so on. On his show, Bannon sometimes plays, and this is the part that really got me scared, he sometimes plays audio montages of MSNBC and CNN shows being brought to you by Pfizer. So he'll just cut it all together. It'll say, like, Anderson Cooper, brought to you by Pfizer. The clear implication being that these shows cannot be trusted because they are in the pay of these companies. It's rule by, and this is a quote, rule by the wealthy for the wealthy against you until you wake up. Now, when he does this, it strikes me that he sounds like a lot of us. But as always in the mirror world, nothing is as it seems. So there are many political stars on the right who are following this playbook. The political scientists William Callison and Quinn Slobodian have termed this strange coming together of what I call the far right and the far out. They term it diagonalism. And they point out that despite the fact that it takes some elements from the left, including the New Age left and some of this anti-corporate critique, it invariably, in country after country, leans hard right. They promise a mix and match of bringing back factory jobs that pay family-supporting wages. These are people like J.D. Vance, Carrie Lake, building the border wall, fighting the toxic drug supply, liberating speech from big tech, banning the woke curricula, and taking on the globalists, which is often code word for the Jews. So that tends to be the kind of stew that gets cooked together. Very similar versions of this political diagonalism have taken root in many countries, from Sweden to Brazil to Italy. And we should not be surprised that this mix and match of anti-corporate stances with highly xenophobic nationalisms is resonating. Many of us here, the older ones, were part of the internationalist left movements that protested outside meetings of the World Trade Organization, the World Economic Forum in Davos, G8 summits, and the International Monetary Fund, exposing their very real roles in undermining democracies and advancing the interests of transnational capital. In the United States, at the turn of the millennium, we held counter-conventions outside both major parties for being beholden to corporate donors and serving the rich rather than the people who voted them into office. Much of this turned into the energy behind Occupy Wall Street and then behind Bernie, and that coursed through various indigenous-led battles against new oil and gas projects, and now against Cop City. But our movements faced severe state repression, and they also made many mistakes. And obviously, we never won power. And now we find ourselves in this strange place where left slogans against oligarchic rule are being appropriated by the hard right and turned into these sinister doppelgangers of themselves. The structural critiques of capitalism are gone, and in their place are discombobulated conspiracy theories that somehow frame deregulated capitalism as communism in disguise. This trend is perfectly distilled by Giorgia Meloni in Italy, the country's first female prime minister as of October 22, and the leader of the party Fratelli d'Italia, which has deep fascist roots in the country. Meloni was an early partner in Steve Bannon's international populist project, where he's brought together different far-right parties to strategize. Meloni is a good student. She threads her speeches with pop culture references and rails against a system that reduces everyone to consumers. She also declares in a supposed rebuke to woke ideology, woke in quotes, I am a woman, I am a mother, I am Italian, I am Christian, as if anybody is telling her she's not allowed to be these things. Watching her meteoric rise, I was reminded of how different Italy was in the summer of 2001, when the ultra-globalization movement reached its highest point in Europe, drawing a million people to the streets of Genoa during the G8 summit to protest corporate attacks on democracy, as well as the effects of rampant consumerism. That movement came from the left. It was young Italians alongside farmers and trade unionists. They defended labor rights as well as migrant rights, and they took pride in their country's distinct culture. But in a pattern that repeated in many countries, left-wing parties in Italy lost their confidence after the September 11 attacks, which was almost immediately after the Genoa protests, and the attendant security and surveillance crackdowns. And the legacy of that faltering is now undeniable. Today, it is Meloni denouncing a system in which everyone is reduced to being what she calls a, quote, perfect consumer slave, only instead of offering an analysis of capital, a system that must enclose all aspects of life inside the market in order to mine them as new profit centers, she blames trans people, immigrants, secularists, internationalism, and the left for the hollowing out at the core of capitalism. And while she rails against, quote, big financial speculators, she has no policies to rein them in, only attacks on Italy's meager unemployment protections. Bannon isn't offering his listeners any real alternatives to corporate predation either. He's just fleecing them in more small-time ways, telling them to buy precious metals and disaster-ready meals. He adopts many of the arguments of the anti-war left to oppose ballooning U.S. military spending, accusing the, quote, cartel ruling Washington of being in the pocket of the military-industrial complex. And then he does everything he can to aim that same sprawling complex at China, which is the surest route to World War III. Still, you can't blame a strategist for being strategic, and it's highly strategic to pick up the resonant issues that your opponents have carelessly left unattended. The more I immersed myself in the worlds that my doppelganger now inhabits, the more I started to feel that the doppelganger effect was generalizing. Issues that we on the left had once championed, full-throated, and in the streets had gone dormant in far too many spaces. And now they were being usurped, taken over by their twisted doubles in the mirror world. So I guess what I'm saying to you here is that I'm not the only one with a doppelganger. The left, the socialist anti-capitalist left, also has a doppelganger. It calls itself populism. Bannon likes to call it inclusive nationalism. He sometimes calls it MAGA plus. It includes quite a few people who once moved in liberal and even left circles and are now working hand in glove with the movement's true leaders, Bannon, Carlson, Meloni, Orban, the list goes on. By saying they are the left's doppelganger, I am not saying they are the same as us or equivalent to us or flip sides of the same coin as the centrists like to claim. This is not a both sides argument, nor is it some kind of nonsense horseshoe theory. I am saying we are connected to them in that they feed off of our setbacks and defeats at the hands of the liberal state, and they also feed off of our silences, missteps, and failures of generosity, however understandable they may be. It isn't their only source of power, of course. They also feed off white and Christian supremacy and logics, off racial resentments. But if we want to understand why they are surging in the way that they are, why if we want to understand how right-wing conspiracy culture is redrawing maps in country after country, I think we need to look at the vacuum created by decades of often successful campaigns to crush the left. And also the vacuums created by ways that we on the left have crushed ourselves without anyone's help. As I said earlier, in mythology and literature, the arrival of one's doppelganger is often seen as a message or a warning that something needs the protagonist's attention, that they are in danger. They must understand the message or be subsumed. Well, my friends, my case to you is that the left is getting doppelganged, and we need to pay close attention. We need to heed these ominous messages. So with my remaining time, I want to offer a few more observations that I hope might inform how we pay attention, some of the things I've learned along the way. As I see it, there is a really clear dialectic in conspiracy culture with three main players. First, there is liberal and neoliberal power with its myriad betrayals, hypocrisies, and planned miseries. Second, there is the left and our relative weakness and tentativeness during the past 2 years. Third, there is the ascendant right, opportunistically feeding off of both, feeding off of the rage generated by those liberal abandonments, and feeding off of the resonances of left issues and framings that have been insufficiently deployed and embodied in the culture. Put a little differently, liberalism created the demand, the market, if you will, for both socialism and barbarism, as Rosa warned us. And now, as then, barbarism is ascendant. One of the most important points I'd like to share about what I have learned by studying my own doppelganger is that conspiracy influencers may get the facts wrong, but they often get the feelings right. And I'll give you a few examples from the sort of far-right conspiracy world. Take QAnon, which is, you know, at the heart of it, there's this off-the-wall claim that elites are harvesting the young for their lifeblood, also known as adrenochrome, so that these elites can stay young forever. Nope, not true. But here's the thing about getting the facts wrong and the feelings right. Those elites are sucking people dry. Their labor, their time, their security, their data. The Davos elite aren't eating our children, as some seriously claim that they are, but they are eating our children's future, and that is plenty bad. QAnon believers imagine secret tunnels underneath pizza parlors in Central Park, the better to traffic children. This too is fantasy, but there are tunnels, literal shadowlands under several major cities, and they do house and hide the poor, the sick, the discarded. Under the flashing lights of Las Vegas, hundreds, even thousands of people really do live in a sprawling network of storm tunnels. This is what I mean by getting the facts wrong, but the feelings right. Their stories, which are always kind of cribbed from Hollywood blockbuster movies, capture the feeling of living in a world with shadowlands, the feeling that every human misery is somebody else's profit, the feeling of being exhausted by predation and extraction, the feeling that important truths are being hidden. That's at the heart of the story. The word for the system driving these feelings starts with C. But if no one ever taught you how capitalism works and instead told you it was all about freedom and sunshine and Big Macs and playing by the rules to get the life you deserve, then it's easy to see how you might confuse it with another C word, conspiracy. There's something else that the conspiratorial right is tapping into that I think we should understand or try to. At the heart of the QAnon cosmology, as well as a lot of the more recent spin-offs of QAnon, because it's got lots of arms, at the heart of it is a sensational fantasy of justice, otherwise known as the Great Storm or the Great Awakening, when the, quote, white hats suddenly arrest all the evil-doing pedophiles and Satanists and thieves and send them to Gitmo. Now, it's kind of touchingly naive, since, as the late cultural theorist Mark Fisher put it, does anyone really think things would improve if we replace the whole managerial and banking class with a whole new set of better people? But you know what? I get the appeal. It sure beats having to watch Michelle Obama sharing candy with George W. Bush, or hearing the knowing laughs of the audience when Bush slipped up and denounced the wholly unjustified and brutal invasion of Iraq, I mean Ukraine, as he did last year. This raises an urgent question. Do mainstream liberals have a vision of justice and accountability? There is the persistent dream that Donald Trump will finally be locked away for one or more of his crimes. But beyond that, is anyone else going to be held accountable for the decisions that have brought us to this brink? What is the plan for seizing the assets of the companies fueling the climate crisis, for instance? It's absurd to hear MAGA Republicans describe the various show trials underway in the House as the new church committee, a reference, as some of you know, to the Senate Select Committee convened in 1975 and chaired by Democratic Senator Frank Church to investigate some of the intelligence world's most notorious dirty tricks at home and abroad. But what did Democrats do when they controlled the House to investigate the ways that intelligence agencies have cooperated with tech giants to invade privacy and surveil us in countless ways, or to pardon whistleblowers like Edward Snowden and Julian Assange? If the hashtag... If the hashtag resistance has no vision for justice, and it does not, we can hardly be surprised to see the impulse for justice resurface in warped form in conspiracy land. So these are just some of the ways that liberal abandonments and abdications set the table for the rise of MAGA Plus. Another key point that I think is helpful to understand, conspiracy culture, and here I'm not talking about theories, but this whole culture of swirling conspiracy, it's a distraction machine, diverting attention away from the economic policies, deregulation, privatization, austerity, that have stratified wealth so cataclysmically in the neoliberal era. People like Bannon rile up anger at the Davos elites, at big tech, at big pharma, but the rage never seems to actually reach those targets. Instead, it gets redirected into these culture wars about anti-racist education, all-gender bathrooms, the great replacement panic directed at black people, much more, all of this is much more than a culture war. It's an actual war. Meanwhile, the billionaires who bankroll the whole charade are safe in the knowledge that the fury coursing through our culture isn't coming for them, which is why I think that people like Elon Musk and Donald Trump love conspiracy theories, right? Like if you're at the top of the pyramid, it's great to have a distraction machine pointing people in all of these different directions. It taps into anti-establishment fury while shifting the attention away from the scandals that we know about and that have already been proven in painstaking detail. So instead, and this is one of the things you notice, the real scandal is always off in the distance. It's always off on the horizon. It's always about to be proven, right? The election was really stolen. We're going to prove it. The vaccines really are killing babies and doctors. We're about to prove it. And so we're not looking at these policies that have created mass death, and we know it. Another aspect of conspiracy culture that makes it appealing to elites is that it leaves capitalist logics intact in a very specific way. Because when you make these claims about these conspiracies, they're always about individuals, right? Like at the heart of the liberal story, there's the individual hero. But at the heart of conspiracy culture, there's the individual villain. Right? It's Fauci, it's Gates, it's Soros, right? And it's this fantasy that if we just got rid of this small group of individualism, then capitalism would be all right. Which brings us back to the role of the socialist left. For me, and I know for many of you, the reason to study and read and write about economic and social systems and to attempt to identify their underlying patterns is because this is sense-making and it is stabilizing. This kind of system-based work is akin to laying a strong foundation for a building. Once it's in place, everything that follows will be sturdier. But without that foundation, nothing will be safe from a strong gust of wind. Yes, our world is still confusing after we understand how power and capital work, but it's not incomprehensible. Even conspiracies are not incomprehensible. What we know is that, as Fisher told us, much of what is packaged as conspiracy today is merely, and this is Fisher's term, the ruling class showing class solidarity. by which he meant that power and wealth conspire to protect themselves. It happens in public and it happens in private. It happens under the spotlight and it happens in the shadows. An economic order that contains inequalities as extreme as ours, in which the vanity rockets of billionaires sail over seas of human misery, is its own kind of depravity. And that level of injustice reproduces more depravity as a matter of course. But there is a difference between a system doing what it was designed to do, no matter the costs, and even if it takes the occasional dirty trick, and secret cabals of nefarious individuals interfering with an otherwise fair and just democracy, which is the story that you'll hear on Steve Bannon's show. This is one of the core reasons for the left to exist, obviously to organize, but also to provide a structural analysis of wealth and power that brings order and rigor to the prevailing and correct sense that society is rigged against the majority and that important truths are being hidden behind pat political rhetoric. Because we cannot change what we do not understand. And because the system is rigged and most people are indeed getting badly screwed, but without a firm understanding of capitalism's drive to find new profit sources to enclose and extract, and without an understanding of how race was created to rationalize the system's most extreme depravities, many will imagine that there is a cabal of uniquely nefarious individuals pulling the strings. In short, we have our work cut out for us, including political education, which starts with fighting those book bans and attacks on teachers and librarians. Because we need our kids to be free to learn. My final message is a simple one. The reason we need to understand how right-wing conspiracists are cobbling together a Frankenstein-like doppelganger of the left is not so that we have yet another reason to beat ourselves up. We need to understand it so that we can fight it. More than that, because neoliberalism's cruelties created the conditions for fascism's resurgence, a resurgent anti-capitalist left is the only force that can successfully fight it. Not content moderators, not fact checkers, not liberal think tanks or data analysts, us. The unabashedly socialist movements represented in this room, anti-racist, eco-feminist, trans-inclusive, democratic socialist movements. Not as a posture to adopt online, or as a particular combination of descriptors to attach to our identities out of some sense that doing so will make us safe and pure, but as a lens through which to understand the world, as the basis to organize and grow our ranks, and as the horizon to move towards. You've heard me say it before, politics hates a vacuum. And if we do not fill the vacuum with credible hope of improving the myriad hardships and debasements of capitalism has unleashed, someone else is going to fill it with hate. And to bring it around to where I started, this is why we have to get strong and do that hard healing grief work and that hard coalition work and that rigorous mapping work of seeing where we are now through the pandemic's portal. Because what we know from studying the most murderous moments in modern history is that every story of triumph for the fascist right is also a story of fragmentation, sectarianism, and stubborn refusal to make strategic alliances on the anti-fascist left. Now is the time to pledge to ourselves and one another that we will not repeat those mistakes, because the world is on fire. And it's not good enough to fail better. We need to beat these m****s.
You were just listening to Naomi Klein on conspiracy culture. She spoke at Socialism 2023 in Chicago on September 3rd. Naomi Klein is professor in the Department of Geography at the University of British Columbia. Her articles appear in leading newspapers and magazines around the world. Her latest book is Doppelganger. This program is produced by Alternative Radio, based in Boulder, Colorado. We're an independent, progressive nonprofit in our 38th year. We're supported solely by individuals just like you. We feature voices rarely heard in the corporate media, such as Michael Parenti, Angela Davis, Medea Benjamin, Arundhati Roy, Chris Hedges, and Vandana Shiva. To access our complete audio and book catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. For copies of today's program, Naomi Klein on Conspiracy Culture, and for her new book, Doppelganger, call us at 1-800-444-1977. That's 1-800-444-1977. Or you can go online, our website, alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org. Printed transcripts, PDFs, and MP3s of this program are free of charge. Just call us, 1-800-444-1977. Special thanks to Anthony Arnov. Joichi is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamyan. Thank you for listening.